Hello and welcome to the Bangers List podcast again. Fucking podcast, what are you talking about? Fuck you.
Not even 10 seconds
we're
in.
We're not starting again. Look, this is a podcast where we talk about a new song every week, heavy metal, preferably from our own personal playlist, which we've been building together for about 3+ years now, boys.
Yeah.
And this week, we're going to be looking at Hang the Mason by From Autumn to Ashes. Blow a kiss or throw a fist, what's it gonna be? First things first, I'll introduce the boys here with me, Daniel, Julian.
How you going?
How you going, man?
Look, so the rules of the playlist were as follows. Has to be a new song, kinda. Has to bang hard, kinda. So you put this new song on, we're taking a huge step back.
Yeah, taking a big run on this one.
And what is it? What kind of genre is it?
Okay, so I guess I'll just give a brief rundown. This actually sort of broke most of the rules of the playlist because, like, I've known this band for quite some time and it wasn't, like, a banger. Like, it wasn't really a heavy one. I've been listening to these guys since, like, 2003. And this record, the record that this song is from, actually came out in 2007. But because it was back then and torrents were barely even a thing or, like, you know, I didn't torrent all that much, I never actually figured out that there was, a B-side to it. So this is one of the B-side tracks. So the record's called Holding a Wolf by the Ears by From Autumn to Ashes, and it was actually the last one they did. But, yeah, this was one of two songs that came off it. And the other reason it's sort of a leap was it's not heavy. It's not like their normal post-hardcore sound. It's quite placated and sort of, like, sullen and forlorn, which was definitely an element of their music from that record specifically, but it was a lot heavier in that really kind of post-hardcore feel.
It is very obscure considering it's like a B-side off an album of a band that has dissolved. And it's like
they're actually back together.
Oh, fantastic.
But they've just been doing touring and stuff.
Okay.
So the occasional show here and there. But they've sort of said, like, we're back together, but we're not. We might do new music.
Tool syndrome, hey?
Yeah, kind of. Yeah, that's a whole other discussion at this point in time, isn't it? So,
yeah.
Look, the thing, I guess, why let it go, the playlist is about sharing the songs with each other originally and now sharing with everyone else. And it is, I listened to it because it was on the list and I liked it. So that's fine, right? It's every kind of genre almost can go on here if it bangs hard enough. So,
yeah, it's such a, you want to use that?
No, I was just going to say, I was just agreeing with Joel. Yeah, I think if you've got if it appeals to you, the idea is to share it with other people and hopefully they get the same kind of banging feeling from it, right?
Yeah.
Absolutely, yeah.
But the thing is, so for me, like you said, these guys are more post-hardcore and this song is different for them, right? Not quite the same as their other stuff. They've got some screams, right?
Yeah, so like with every record that they did four records.
Yeah.
There was a bit of softer stuff on a lot of them. So this is just one of those songs that doesn't really have a lot of the heavy stuff. So this is their sort of more trademark sound, not to contradict something I said earlier, but it's just one of those songs where they didn't go too hard on it. Do you know what I mean?
Yeah. It's because I was listening to it and I was in 2007 when it came out. You know, it was the time when bands like Blink-182 were pretty popular, you know?
True.
Had they made a comeback by that point? Like, when did Neighborhoods come out?
They would have released an album in 2003.
Yeah.
The Blink-182 album.
And yeah.
That would have been having its success for a few years with its good songs.
And okay, yeah, no, it definitely
and
did.
So I think some bands might have been trying to capture that success, you know, like riding the pop punk train, the whiny vocal kind of thing. That's the vibe I got from this song. But like I said, the other songs are a bit different.
Yeah.
So, Mike, if you want to jump in a bit more to the band, it's going to be a different sound. But yeah, right?
Yeah. I mean, they'd sort of been doing their thing since around the time, like early 2000s, maybe 2000, I think.
Okay.
I think Abandon Your Friends was the one before that. That came out in 2005. Then it was The Fiction We Live in 2003. And then Too Bad You're Beautiful was 2001, and then they had like an EP or something before that. So they've definitely been around since like late 90s.
Okay, so they weren't necessarily inspired.
No. They're from...
just happened to sound the same.
Yeah, they're from New York. I forget where. I think Coney Island. I'm not sure, but they're from that New York kind of hardcore, like that older style New York hardcore sort of scene that was big in the 80s and 90s. So that's where they were born from.
And Mel has evolved a lot since then. But to give you kind of an idea of how long ago this song came out, Avril Lavigne was like the number one album of that year, and like Linkin Park's album, I think Meteor or something?
No, it was it would have been Minutes to Midnight. Meteor was 2003.
Yeah,
it
was,
By the way, like Linkin Park had like a song at the top of the charts and Avril Lavigne did. So it's years and years ago and things have changed since then.
Those were the days, weren't they?
What people think was cool was, a lot different back then, I guess.
Oh, yeah.
So
metal was, for me, metal like in its infancy, you know? It hadn't become this brutal breakdown, shredding, screaming stuff that we have today.
I was actually talking to someone about this the other day, just to get sidetracked. So my mate at work was giving me shit about not having listened to Alive or Just Breathing by Killswitch Engage. Like, I've never listened to that record.
Yeah,
I actually had a quick listen to some of it and I went, that's not bad. But his contention was that, like, he goes, every core band you listen to, like, owes it to Killswitch for that record. Like, that sort of, he reckoned that jump-started a lot of the core stuff that we listen to these days. And he wasn't like, oh, they're the only band that did it. But I think from what he's told me, that record did have quite an impact.
I will pay that because it was very hard to break out in the world without Spotify, YouTube. The internet being as big as it is. Like we always say, the internet was big, but to break out for a metal band back then was hard. You can see, like, these guys, they had to dissolve, I guess, because they didn't get as popular as they wanted to, right?
The reason they sort of broke up was kind of, it was a few things. They sort of just got into that point in their career where they decided they were going to go do something else, and there was, stuff going on within the band, like they had a front man for most of their career that was a screamer, and then the actual vocalist from this, Fran Mark, he was a drummer and he would do the clean vocals. So they had like a dual vocal kind of thing going on and it was quite good. But then he actually took over frontman duties for this, but he actually drummed the whole record as well. So I don't know that he was a very busy dude. Yeah. So they actually had a guy that played with them live named Jeff Gretz, I believe his name was, for most of their stuff. But then they sort of just went, I think they sort of just got to the point where they were like, oh, we're not going to do this anymore. We're going to do other things. And Fran Mark went on to front two different bands, Warship and I forget what the other band's called. It'll come to me in 5 minutes. And then a couple of the other guys went and joined other bands. So it sort of, I guess it just run its course. So. Yeah.
Well, fuck this song though. It's, I guess in metal, there's always good subject matter, I feel. I know you don't care, don't you? Because you don't listen to the lyrics.
But I researched the lyrics in this song because I was trying to figure out what the hell they're actually saying.
Yeah.
Because I couldn't understand it.
Like, he does have a very, for a clean vocalist, he has a very non-
Yeah.
approachable kind of clean vocal
it's
style. Like,
it's a very, it sounds good, but it's a very sloppy style of singing that he's got, and it's very
So it's sloppy because I thought the mix might have not done him any favors.
The mix wasn't definitely not great. I think it was a bit earlier on in their career. This song.
No, this was the last record they did.
The last record.
So the record, funnily enough, the record before this, "Abandon Your Friends," actually had a very, like, not highly produced, but if you think, I hate to go back to it, but it's a very good example. "Stand Up and Scream" by Asking Alexandria. The production on that, everything's very sharp. You can hear everything really directly. There's no like sort of washy kind of feeling. And then they did this record, and I heard the opening track from it, "Death Cult Social Club," and went, "Fuck, it's all washy." But I guess that was the sort of sound they wanted. They didn't want to have that really highly produced or like tightly sound.
Why wouldn't you prefer like a really crisp sound?
I'm not sure. Like I think, but see, that's all of our preferences as well.
Yeah, it is.
You know what I mean?
Yeah, maybe you're into the sound. It sounds more almost a live sound, a more raw sound.
Raw's the right.
Yeah,
sound,
raw, that's actually a fantastic word for it.
I can understand, and still, like, the song is still good. It's listenable.
This record has a lot of. Like, if you go through the lyrics of it, there are a lot of songs that have you could almost feel the tension that the singer is feeling, or he's telling this story, and these stories in particular. And there's another one on the record that's sort of similar to this one in Vain, where it sort of alludes to religion, but it has a lot of despondency attached to it. So I feel like that was sort of that came out in the mix too.
Yeah,
you know what I mean?
Like emotion, making evoke a feeling of, you said, like dread and not dread, but like
panic.
Panic.
Yeah.
That's fair enough.
Speaking of the raw feel that it has. I think that makes it, I think you'd agree, makes it more relatable.
Yeah.
When it's not
apparent that you're listening to a band.
Hmm.
Like, if you're, do you get what I mean when I say that? Like, your feelings sort of take over when you're listening to the music rather than I'm listening to a band, there's a drummer, two guitarists, bass player, and vocals, and they're doing X, Y, and Z. Whereas if your emotions sort of lead you and then you go, oh shit, that's why I'm listening to music, because you're sort of feeling more than you're listening, I guess.
So this is back in the time you could say that emo culture was at its peak, and a lot of people were feeling, I guess. It was a tumultuous time in their lives, and they're trying to go through stuff, and this would really speak to them, maybe.
Yeah, well, I don't, like, not these guys particularly, but yeah, emo music had been, like, you know, from sort of 2003-04 onwards, and it, I guess people were so unused to having so much raw emotion in their music or the things they listened to, like, you know, not that people were, like, really just tough and hard as nails and stuff before, but, like, you know, there wasn't a lot of music that I knew of at the time that went, no, hang on a second, like, not everyone's built up, not everyone's got a wall around them, like, you know, you sort of break down these walls and stuff like that, so.
Yeah, and yeah. So that leads us back to, like, the subject matter of songs and this song in particular.
Yeah.
So it's very, it's very negative towards, not the Bible or to religion, from what I gather, right?
But I
don't know if there's more to it than that.
I believe so, yeah.
So, lyrically, and just looking at the subject matter of the song, what did it say to you guys? Anything profound?
Well...
Yeah, we put that on the spot. well,
okay, so making me think about lyrics is getting way outside my comfort zone. But I did look into the lyrics, as I said, because I didn't really understand what the hell he was singing at first. I could pick up a few lines here and there, but yep. I couldn't piece it together. So I looked it up and I'm going, okay. And yeah, it did allude to a lot of sort of religious kind of views, but I also mostly saw that as more metaphorical rather than actual.
You know, yeah. He's definitely a lyricist that uses, he paints a picture with the way he writes. A lot of it's not direct.
Yeah.
Like a lot of the stuff he talks about on a lot of the songs, particularly from this record as well, he's using analogies, metaphors and similes and stuff like that rather than sort of attacking a point directly.
Yeah.
Do you know what I mean?
It makes it quite cryptic.
Very cryptic, yes.
Clever lyrics sometimes as well, like show your mastery of the English language. It's clever. It shows that you really put a lot of effort into your lyrics, even if the words are enough to confuse someone. That's cool sometimes.
Mm-hmm.
You know, instead of just being like, fuck this, fuck you, fuck that, break down.
Profit.
And can anyone say capture the crown? Those kind of lyrics are great, though. Going back to, I think it was the latest podcast when we brought up the old CC Hart incident. I think lyrics where you can put your own kind of interpretation on it.
And, like, there's no one direct topic.
And apply it to your own life experiences. Like, that makes it more powerful. And going back to how raw it is and relatable the kind of music can be, I think that all ties together, right?
Yeah. So, well,
the lyrics like that are great.
For my take, like, we'll jump into it directly. For my take, it's not, like, it's definitely talking about religion because he refers to Sunday school and stuff like that. But he's not bashing religion. He's more or less saying, this is not, like, I'm not meant for this. This is not for me. Like, this is not something that I can fit into. Yeah. And he's also, this is just my opinion, but he's also in the chorus, you know, they'll keep you locked up
till the time is right,
and you can keep your mind and body occupied. I guess it's sort of an anecdotal response, but I definitely have seen that. I've been exposed to sort of all types of Western religion, I guess Christianity and Catholicism, and I'm more than happy to share, like, sort of more of a personal story. But when I was a bit younger, around the time this record came out, actually, I had some friends that were quite heavily involved in a church here, and it was like, you know, there's a big youth culture and stuff like that. And without going into too much detail, some of the people that were the senior, like, youth pastors and stuff like that, they had this sort of outside of the church culture, and they were, it just sounds bad to say, but they were actively and sort of passively grooming girls that were about 13, 14 to 15 for, like, these guys that were a little bit older than them, like, you know, anywhere up to 20, 22 years old. And it's really fucked to say, because, like, I never thought I'd see that happen, and I never realized until a little bit later on, but they were sort of not, like, grooming them to sleep with these. Obviously, like, you know, the Christian way is that you have, like, a relationship and then you sort of get married and do that whole thing. But it was this very, like, particular way they did things. And then I heard the chorus, you know, they keep you locked up till the darkest night, kill you locked up till the time is right, and keep your mind and body occupied.
Yeah.
That was definitely something that I saw in these sort of newer age Christianity-based religions. So it was really impactful when I actually heard those lyrics. And I went, fuck, I've seen that with my real eyes. Do you know what I mean?
So, like, his problem kind of run parallels to yours, or his, you know, the subject matter again. Talking about his problems with religion or whatever.
Yeah.
And you've had some as well, and been like, oh, fuck, I'm identifying here.
Yeah, absolutely. And
that's a way that a song can get, like, a real personal connection with you.
Yeah.
And so, like, yeah, cool. Again, thanks for sharing the song.
No, that's okay. Yeah. Like, it wasn't my problems that I went through, but it was people that I'm still close with and are dear to me that saw that. Not so much went through that, like, you know, but I did know one or two people that were sort of involved, or they sort of realized what was going on and went, we don't want a part of this, so on and so forth. So, yeah. You know, I think, yeah, well, yeah, I won't go into it too much more, but that was sort of something that I can relate to. I think the other thing too is one of the lines of the song is interesting to talk about, because he's sort of the whole time he's talking about, oh, sorry, not one of the last lines, blow a kiss or throw a fist. Now's your chance to leave.
Yeah.
So that's saying, you know, something's going on here. You know, something's not right. This doesn't all make sense. How are we going to go about this? Like, what are you going to do? How do you get out? You know, how do you not sort of involve yourself with this kind of thing? And look, we could be completely wrong, but this is my interpretation of it.
That's the line that stood out to me as well. That little verse, that passage there.
Yeah.
We'll get into
that
passage. but when I first heard that, I thought it was more along the lines of someone who's come to a crossroads in their life.
Yeah.
And it's like, okay, like now's your chance to leave. Blow a kiss, or are you going to suck up, blow a kiss, or are you going to throw a fist and fight your way out of this?
Yeah.
And find a way to make a difference in your life. You know? That was my understanding of it, and I don't know what you guys think of it, but
no, that is pretty, I don't know, pretty spot on. Now, like when you say it, I'm like, oh yeah, I agree now. I agree with that, sure, because I guess I just couldn't fucking make my own opinion. But
yeah,
I guess the next line after that, the last line of the song, pretty much, which you would have wanted to touch on, is
and on that day they'll hang the mason who laid the stones for the wells we wish in.
Yeah, and so the more I think about that particular line, the more I feel it's like people, him himself, have turned against the people that have brought him to where he is, or created what he's followed, or is following, and they've turned their back on that. That's what I feel from that line, you know?
Yeah.
Like, let's say, you know, he made the well for him and they hung him because they didn't fucking need him anymore.
Yeah, we were talking about this the other day, actually. I sort of looked at the well as we don't have to call it Christianity, but this religion, this figurehead, and it's not necessarily like the priest, but it's the idea of the religion, and that's what the well is, because you know you're throwing you're wishing in this well, you know what I mean, and that's sort of, is that like prayer or what is that? But it's not something that's tangible, and it's not something that's guaranteed. So it's sort of you're putting your hopes out there. So yes, the person that's created this is the person, like it ultimately became their downfall. It sort of came back to bite them in the ass, which I guess is sort of what you're saying as well.
Is it not a passage from the Bible, that line then?
I haven't looked that up.
Because the way it reads, it could almost sound like maybe...
more. Yeah.
It could almost be from the Bible. I don't know.
Definitely from the Old Testament.
I just can tell I definitely don't read the Bible.
So. No.
No. Do you have any thoughts on that line at all?
Yes, I do. But the term, hang the mason, like, I was trying to get my head around that. Like, what does it truly mean? And I started Googling. I'm like, and you know, obviously I knew about...
He means researching. He's researching.
Researching. How else will you research in 2019? Come on.
Google foo.
But I couldn't put my finger on it, but I did come across an unofficial term for Mason, and Urban Dictionary, but Urban Dictionary is sort of more kind of socially accepted these days. Whilst it's not an official definition, but it still enlightened me a little bit. But a mason is someone who's considered like almost like a top bloke, goody two shoes, nice guy, will always be there for you, kind of always doing the right thing, you know?
I haven't heard that one before, and I could
kind of see some parallels to the lyrics in the song there. It's about maybe about someone who was that mason figure and was trying to let go of that, you know, try not to be that person anymore.
Yeah, I can see that.
Yeah.
That's different. Different, yeah. I'll give you that.
And also, in the chorus, what does it say? It says, they keep you locked up so the time is right. In the music there, it's just like, it's a couple chords, right? And the pattern is just very simple. Dun-dun-dun, dun-dun-dun, maybe fucking five notes to it. It's quite, it goes to show that, like, simply delivering a song can still be effective again without too much preamble or going insane with your instruments.
Well, it's in the key of D minor, this song. I was having a little bit of a look at that before. I think it's in a drop D tuning, just a regular drop D tuning. Quite common, especially for music that stemmed from that era, the early to mid noughties. Look, it's, I think, is pretty much based around three chords throughout the
duration of the song. Yeah.
But yeah. I was looking up tabs and chords for it. I couldn't come across
because that's how obscure really it is. It's not many people
that know exactly, they were known, but I think they were one of those bands that were more known in their day. And it's only people that were really sort of into them that now remember them.
Yeah.
You know, because like we've talked about before, this was before the age of like massive social media. So I think like, you know, you go to any of their clips on YouTube, they don't really have a lot of official stuff, but it's always someone uploading something and there are people going, yeah, you know, I remember this song. And, but they never had an absolutely enormous following. Like they were in Australia once that I remember. They actually played here at, No. What was it was Metal for the Brain. I think they played one of the Metal for the Brains. I was probably 17, so maybe 12, 13 years ago. That was one of those festivals that was at the one of the universities. I don't know that it was specifically Metal for the Brain, but I know they were here.
Right.
They
made it to the expensive Australia.
Yeah, but just touching, because we've touched quite heavily on the lyrics, but just the music. I agree with you. It's quite simplistic in its delivery. Because you know the verse has that sort of just sort of trundling drum pattern to it, and the lead work picks up in the chorus. I just wanted to mention not chugs, but that like da 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 section before the last lines. Yeah. That is actually quite a common thing for this band. They've done that kind of thing in a couple of different songs as well. Not exactly that. You know, that speed and everything, but that was that sort of smashing to a halt and then winding up. That was something that they actually did quite well. That was something they did quite well.
Because it wasn't a breakdown. It's just, like a crescendo into something else, which was the last chorus, I think. That part goes...
Well, that's the Hang the Mason part.
Yeah.
It goes into that, yeah.
Yeah.
So, you know, a lot of their stuff was a bit more complex. You know, they did have some verse-chorus stuff, but a lot of it was really frenetic in its feel. So you'd be in a verse, but they got one called Underpass Tutorial, and it's just fucking chaos from start to finish. You know what I mean? The verse is sort of all over the shop, and then the chorus gets more and more crazy. So that was something they did well. So this was sort of the other end of the spectrum for them, but they were good at balancing it between really chaotic, like almost mathcore, I guess you'd call it, for want of a better term, and then the slower stuff.
Yeah, gotcha.
Mm.
Right.
So, look, I have only listened to this song by them, unless I heard them when I was a young emo kid. But what's some other songs by them you think are okay, if any?
I'd say from this record, the Holding a Wolf by the Ears record, the whole thing's worth a listen.
The whole thing?
Yep, definitely.
Yeah, I did listen to that record at one stage in the background.
I think probably like 5 years ago I told you to listen to it. And it was a long time ago. From this record, I would say Death Cult Social Club, the lead single. Underpass Tutorial is a good one as well, and the second last one called A Goat in Sheep's Rosary, which is the one I referenced earlier, that's also hints at religion and the despondency of humanity as a lyrical theme. So those ones are definitely worth a crack.
I was going to ask you, Daniel, because you seem to have a very wide knowledge base of bands that exist.
Sure.
Who do these guys sound like? I said Blink-182 earlier, but that's just this song specifically. What does it sound like to you?
Sounds like very early Bullet for My Valentine, mate. Very early. All These Things I Hate revolve around you.
Yep.
The singing, the guitar tones, the vibe that you get from the song.
Yes.
You know, it's
the nasally-esque vocals.
Yeah, I can see a lot of similarities with early Matt Tuck stuff. He's a great singer now, Matt Tuck, but back then he was good, but you could tell his technique wasn't there.
It was all head voice.
Yeah, well, you know. Go on.
I actually couldn't think of any other bands to tell you to listen to if you like this song. So thanks for giving us one. Do you have any, Julie?
Other bands to listen to if you like these guys?
Hard question.
The only band that I can think of immediately, because we're recording, if we weren't recording I could name 10, but I would say early Under Oath.
Yeah, that's right in that kind of...
Norma Jean, early Norma Jean, The Chariot, I've mentioned them before. They got a song called Placentipede. The reason I bring it up is because the guy from the band that gave them that name, it was... I keep thinking Of Mice and Men, but it was Coheed and Cambria.
Oh, yes.
They were friends with that band as well. Oh, and apparently one of the guys in that band gave them a name for a song called Placentipede.
Genius.
Yeah, so they're another band. They're sort of more of the rocky part, but
it's Coheed and Cambria. It's weird that they're friends and their sound is it's not completely dissimilar because Coheed and Cambria are very rocky with these extremely high vocals. And these guys are kind of, like I said, emo core, almost post-hardcore.
Yeah.
Pop punk vibes. That's cool to see that, you know, bands with different styles, pretty different styles, still like making stuff associate, and sharing ideas. Yeah. And I find that interesting. And look, you know, we always bang on about, I fucking always bang on about it, actually. About
bang on. Yeah, I see what you did there. Get out.
I just talk a lot of shit about, you know, this music being your own personal journey and how a certain song can come to mean something more to you than other songs because of an experience with it. I'll tell you what about this song because I've got another story about a song.
No, here we go. Well, I had one before, so.
Yeah, it's kind of strange, I guess. When my son was born, I was like holding him for the first time and his mother was asleep and, you know, usually you sing Twinkle Twinkle Little Star or whatever. I was like, oh, fuck, I don't know. This song was in my head. So I like sung the second chorus to him a few times.
Yeah, right.
I was like, I'd listened to that song a lot leading up to him being born. It was in my head. I sang it to him. I was like, yeah, man, that's... I should have just sung Twinkle Twinkle Little Star because this is a little bit heavy for a baby. but yeah, so that's how we got like a personal connection with me. And like I said, I like it now. Really enjoy the song. It's good. It needs to be discussed. How many bangs?
All right. Fuck, we're here already. Well, I'm going last because...
All right, I'll go first because I just want to add just a little bit on the music before we get into the bangs. I feel like we talked a lot about the lyrics and the meaning, but I'm going to go into the actual music a little bit. So that's all right. Just give me a minute here. But I namely want to speak about the lead work in this song, the lead guitar work. Through the verses, you hear that really sort of eerie, subtle...
Yeah, it's not bluesy, but
it's... No, it's like it's in the minor key. Like I said, the song's in the key of D minor. It's utilizing notes from the D minor scale.
For reference, that was something they did quite a lot as well. They a lot of their songs have a definitive rhythm and then a lead with lead work section.
Yeah, the lead creates that, adds to the theme of the song, you know, and you hear that, you know, do that little passage that pops up quite frequently throughout the song. It's so simple, but so effective. And it's, you know, the use of melody in metal music, once again, like we've talked about this before, but it's very underrated. Like it really adds a crucial layer to songs when melody is used effectively.
Even if it's just something really small, like it's not complicated, it's not the whole way through, but it, in my experience as well, it really can invoke an emotion and put a massive feeling into the song.
Even like three notes ascending into like a chorus or something will add a lot of effect. It's a very small thing you can do and it'll just like add another layer, like I said, another layer, but it can create more than just the layers. It can evoke new emotions, new feelings, and push yourself with the next section of the song. And they, like I said, they do it in this, right? So
and with those really simple notes that the guitarist is using, you'll hear, like if you listen really carefully, you'll hear a bit of a delay in there. So for those that know, delay is like an echoing kind of effect. It's a very, very subtle delay. But I had a close listen to it because it did intrigue me. And I can hear a bit of a reverb chucked in on that sound lead guitar tone as well. Very commonly used for, especially for modern guitar, for those two effects. Like they're kind of essential in a way. But because it's such a melodic and slow drawn out notes, the delay and the effects that are put on it kind of have more an impact. So it's really really fascinating. Yeah. And you also, if you listen really carefully, I think it's the second verse, you'll hear some natural harmonics come through as well, which kind of add to the eeriness really.
Yeah, you know? Underneath the accept your application for my review, that line.
Yeah.
But yeah, I definitely hear them. It's one of those things. It's funny though, you can listen to music fucking over and over and over and there are things you'll never notice. You know what I mean? And then someone points it out. Just to get sidetracked again, a good example. My dad, he's in his 60s now, but he's always been a massive fan of the Beatles. Huge fan of the Beatles. Like growing up, he grew up in the 60s and stuff. Anyway, he told me one day, because Help is, we always listened to the Beatles when we were a kid. And, you know, he liked to show us what, like he thought good music was, which was a lot of like the, like British music from the 60s and 70s. So the record Help, the title song, which is fucking a really good song. He hadn't noticed for like 20 years that in the first verse, the backing vocals lead the lead vocals into each line. And second verse, there's a similar thing again in the second verse, where they lead, and he'd never noticed that. He just, it had always been just the song was sung and it sounded really good. I guess you can sort of, you can't blame someone for not noticing that, because the vocal harmonies between Lennon McCartney, but also involving Harrison, was so fucking good that you were just happy to be there. You know what I mean? And yeah, he noticed it one day and he just went, oh shit, I just completely blew his mind. So, you know, and he'd be listening to that song for 30 years.
Wow.
You know, and he just completely slipped by him. So I think, you know, there's stuff that we listen to that we might not notice little nuances, you know, the whole, like we might never notice them, but they're there and they do make, you know, they do add to the feeling of a song.
Yeah, I've been listening to this song for maybe a year or two now, and only about this week I realized that there is a lot of harmonies. He's there, so...
Yeah, they're very subtle, aren't they? But they're there.
Yeah, very subtle. And it was just because I listened on a different medium. Instead of my headphones, I think I had it in my car, maybe. And I was like, jeez, I haven't fucking heard this. It makes
a huge difference.
It's interesting what a big room can do. Yeah. Like, I like to listen to stuff in ear if I'm listening to it, really focusing on it. That being said, I got, you know, a soundbar at home, and that pumps hard too. But I think you're always going to get a more direct feeling in your ears.
That's right. That's right.
You know, like direct input.
Yeah, if you're listening through larger speakers, or, you know, depending on the size of the room and everything as well, but it can kind of just all blend in. You don't really notice it. But if you've got it shooting in one ear, especially if it's a stereo sound with different
like they've got left and right channels.
Yeah, you're going to get like the guitar in one ear and the bass in another, for instance, or probably a bass in both, but like one guitar in one ear, another guitar in the other ear.
Yeah.
You can really.
Which was the most crushing fucking thing as a teenager when one of your headphones died.
Yeah.
One of your cable driven headphones died. So all you could hear was like one guitar. You're like, all right, it's coming. And you just have to fucking just deal with it until you could afford to buy another pair of shit headphones.
Getting ready for that fat solo. And then you're like, you know, listening to a bit of November Rain or something, and then. All
these
are just chords.
Yeah.
So underwhelming.
You're fucking around with the cables, or like, you're like moving it around. And then the worst one was when the jack would start going, like the 3.5 aux jack. And you're like moving it around on your fucking iPod or whatever it is. You're like your black and white 128 gig iPod that you saved up for like a whole year to buy. And then the fucking thing, you're like, you're twisting it, you hear static, and you're like, it's not like a death rattle, isn't it? It's like the Cheney Stokes of headphones.
Yeah, it was just really heartbreaking when that would happen, and you'd like, music sounds like it's under a doona. It's getting further away. Oh, fuck this.
Just hit by your parents. I need a new set of headphones. And like, you got some like the other day. You just like fucked a pair in like a week or so.
Thank God for Bluetooth.
Yeah.
Oh, I'm so indoctrinated. I got Bluetooth headphones now. They don't have that big round your neck thing. They're just little ones like that, and they play for about 8 hours. Oh. I can't go back to cabled headphones, eh? I'm so fucking spoiled for choice on those ones. You know, the pair I've got are really good. They last fucking forever.
Yeah, 8 hours is good for Bluetooth.
Yeah.
Oh.
Anyway, look, massively sidetracked again. Back to the bangs.
Yeah.
Who wants to go first?
I'll go first. We'll go in a clockwise direction today.
For everyone in the room?
Yeah.
We will have three microphones soon.
Just to give you that image, you know. Look. It has grown on me. At first, I thought, you know, the sloppiness of the song, it didn't really appeal to me. But like we said earlier, it's raw and it's powerful. You can relate to that emotion in the song. It's very cryptic, and I like that. And once you listen to those extra layers, it makes you appreciate it a lot more. So originally, I was going to give it like a 5, but probably up to about a 7. 7 bangs out of 10 for me.
Yeah, 7 bangs for the breakdowns and heavy banging shit in the song. I like it. So we'll expand more on what you said. You like listening to it enough that you became familiarized with it. Yeah. That's a big thing in music. If you listen to something enough and it can actually grow on you to the point where it might become like a guilty pleasure. Like, I have some embarrassing songs that I like because I've...
What's one of them?
Heard, I can't tell you.
Come on.
Can we guess?
No, you couldn't guess it. I went on a holiday once and... for a couple of days, and the people I were with played like 2 Fetty Wap songs the whole time. Is that his name? Fetty Wap? The guy with no eye? He's got one eye? Don't know.
I don't know who the fuck you're talking about, no.
Yeah, cool. Anyway, he's got, I don't know, it's kind of like...
Is it like pop, rap?
Yeah, pop, rap, R&B, shit, stuff. Anyway, they listened to it so much, I was like, I fucking hate this. This is awful. Then a week later, I was like, got to hear that song again.
What's one of yours? While we're doing it, I've got one. What's yours?
The guilty pleasure.
Like, really guilty pleasure as well.
Let's think.
Julian, you can go. He's so smart.
Oh, okay. All right.
Let me think of mine.
We can do this all day. I've got heaps.
Fuck. Bad Girls Club by Falling in Reverse. Yes. That's one of the newer ones. Hey, there was.
We'll talk about that one in the cup.
Yeah, we'll get to that. There was a bit of nonsense going with the band, so it's kind of. I don't want to bring it up, but there's a Pierce the Veil song that I really like as well. I used to really fucking dig. It was called Caraphernalia.
Oh, I love that song.
Yeah.
Oh, shit. No, we can touch
with Jeremy McKinnon as well. Like, there's some shit that went on with their drummer that was pretty fucked up recently, but. But this is a long time before that. This is when I used to... my stereo broke in my car, so I'd put my Nokia 6300 on my shoulder and listen to music out of that, because that thing had enough battery to outlast a fucking apocalypse.
Yeah.
Do you know what I mean? Like, I couldn't... It was a 3x4 keypad, but yeah, that's definitely... Not so much these days, but that was a massive guilty pleasure of mine. I was like, I can't be seen listening to this.
Exactly.
Like, you know, weird. Like, Vic Fuentes sounds like a girl.
Isn't that a weird thing to be, like, embarrassed about what you listen to? And I guess that's what, it's another personal side where you keep that stuff to yourself.
Yeah.
I don't want anyone to know, but I love this. Like you said, with Falling in Reverse. Daniel, yeah, mate, your turn to be on the spot here.
All right, look.
What is it?
There are definitely many, but one that the first one has come to mind.
Is it Katy Perry?
It's not Katy Perry, but Katy Perry's great. Come on.
is it that Moves Like Jagger song?
No, definitely not. That's probably the worst Maroon 5 song.
They just suck in general, don't they?
Ooh. No, Harder to Breathe is great. There we go, Harder to Breathe, that's one.
I want to hear what you're going to say originally. Okay.
Going to say Brian Adams, Summer of 69, okay? Yeah.
You mean Summer of Dinner for Two.
Okay. That's not even bad.
I have to give credit. My brother told me that joke, and he commits to that joke so hard, and I just thought I'd give it a go. And it's terrible, but...
Can't hear
it's
anybody
good.
Laughing.
No.
Oh, there's no one here.
That's right.
I guess I'll tell you how many bangs I think, Julian. I love this song, man. It's great. Like I said, it's really grown on me. It's got a personal touch. I'm going to give it a 3. Because it doesn't bang hard enough. That's it.
Oh, fuck. Okay. You really put me on the spot here. Just by virtue of the fact that it's not... Like, I definitely respect that it's not a heavy song, but that was kind of the point as well. I kind of wanted to shake things up.
Yeah.
I was just so fucking cut that I'd never heard it. But like I said, you know, 2007, when this album came out, it wasn't in stores near me, so I had to fucking download it on LimeWire. You know what I mean?
LimeWire.
Yeah. FrostWire, you know how it was. And, you know, you can Wikipedia fucking anything these days. You know, like, you, and, you know, they'll have, like, the fucking, you go to a record, and they'll have the track list, then, like, the bonus track list, then, like, the Japan. Why does Japan get all this shit? Like, have you noticed that? Every album has, like, a special Japan release, and they get extra content.
Really?
You know what I mean? Like, it's just, Japan's like, yeah, we just get everything, and fuck all of you. Go and look up a record you like on Wikipedia, and... Quite commonly, it will have like a Japan extended release, and I don't know why.
Like a bonus song that we
yeah.
haven't gotten.
Yeah, that was like on the Jewel Case CD.
Yeah.
Anyway, so I'd never heard of it. So that was part of the reason I would kick myself so much. I would give it, I'm going to give it an 8.
Yeah.
I definitely respect the fact that it doesn't bang, but I think a song as a heavy music listener that doesn't bang, but still. Invokes such a feeling, and you can just like you're just so attracted to it, no matter how much its style, like sort of repels you initially. Like you said, Daniel, that its style, yeah, it was washy, it was all over the place, but you came to really enjoy it. So I think you know a song like that that can sort of reel you in definitely has as much merit as like a song with a monster breakdown in it that just makes you want to punch cunts.
And I actually punch cunts. I actually don't think. Metal listeners exclusively listen to metal either. So that's
no point. Fucking fear. No way.
Except you, maybe.
No, look. I thought of another guilty pleasure. I have been known to rock out to Lady Gaga on occasion as well. So there you go. There you have it. So we don't just listen to metal. It's not just metal.
On that note.
On that note, we're turning the podcast off.
Talk to us on Twitter at The Bangers List. Follow the playlist as it grows on Spotify and also The Bangers List. Listen to us on Spotify. Give us 5 stars on Apple. What else can everybody do?
We're on a few mediums now, aren't
we? Send us a message if you've got questions, because I'm running out of stuff to talk about, as you can tell.
What are we up to now?
39 minutes.
Oh, Jesus. All right. Fair bit of filler in this episode from
also,
me.
Also, to any aspiring musos out there, I know it can be a tough life, but make sure you get car insurance, all right? Just very, very useful. Very useful.
All right. Would you like to tell people what happened to you today?
I got hit. I was driving. My car got hit, I should say. And thankfully, I have car insurance. But a couple of years ago, I got advice from a guy that I used to live with named Joel. May or may not be in this podcast right now. But he said, fuck, who needs car insurance when you've got, like, you know, you just get money. Who needs car insurance? Right? And then
that is you to a fucking T, hey?
And so for a while, I listened to him. And then eventually, I was like, you know what? Fuck that. I'm getting car insurance. I'm so thankful I did. So
it was like 3 years later. But of course.
You know,
paid off. Yeah, hot tips on this podcast, boys. And we'll talk to you all next week. And peace. We are at the summit.